Ever try to get into one of Advertising Week's amazing sessions and suddenly hear that the room is at capacity? Now you can still experience it in real time. Listen to that keynote or panel as a live audio stream in the Advertising Week app, powered by Live365. Advertising Week Radio features sessions, podcast clips, curated music, and more, both during the shows and year-round. Visit aw.live365.com for easy access instructions. Live365, the world's audio.
Welcome to Great Minds, and today we have a Midwest feast, an embarrassment of riches. We have two guests, the leaders of the recently joined, about 6 month anniversary, Barclay OKRP. Two terrific shops, one out of Kansas City, one out of Chicago, that have come together this calendar year. We know them both. They are terrific, and we are thrilled to welcome Tom O'Keefe, who is the founder and CEO coming out of the OKRP side, and Jeff King, the CEO coming out of the Barclay side. Jeff, you're in Kansas City. Tom, in the great city of Chicago, one of my very favorite places. And we are thrilled to welcome you both to Great Minds. And a special thanks to our dear friend, Katie Kempner, for bringing us all together. So welcome, boys.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having us.
So, Jeff, I want to start with you, and we share a similar route. Whatever a modest, very modest degree of success I've had, I always trace back to my internships. I was lucky enough to go to a great school in Atlanta. I went to Emory, and I interned at the Atlanta Chamber of Commerce, the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. And our crack Great Minds research team has uncovered a little nugget about you interning for Barclay, initially being told no, there's no slot for you, and you sort of figured out a way to get in there anyway. So I'd love to go back to 1991, give or take, and talk about that early experience as an intern at the agency that one day you would become CEO of.
Yeah, thanks. You're taking me way back, and you're also dating me. Thanks for doing that. But it was, it was 1991. I was between my junior and senior year at the University of Missouri School of Journalism, one of the top J schools in the country. I'll add that plug. And there was a posting back then. It was literally a posting on a bulletin board for a scholarship opportunity with the Ad Club of Kansas City. So I applied, did my essay, drove to Kansas City, did all the interviews with all the Ad Club executives, and was awarded the scholarship. And part of the scholarship was money for my senior year, but also you're assigned a mentor, somebody who works in the business in Kansas City, in the Kansas City advertising marketing community. So I had a great mentor. Her name was Tommy Wieland. Her husband actually worked at Barclay. His name was Tom Wieland. So Tom and Tommy. And Tommy introduced me to two individuals who were running the intern program that year at Barclay. And so I called him up and said, Tommy Wieland gave me your name, asked me to call, told him who I was. And they said, oh, it's great, but we're really sorry. We filled all the intern spots. So I said, okay, well, you know, I just pleaded for an interview anyway. Give me an informational interview. I'm in town. I'd like to come by. So they agreed to meet with me. And then once we had our conversation, I asked them how many interns they had. They told me, I think it was 13. And I asked them why they chose that number, why they didn't have 14 interns. And they didn't really have a good response, so they added a spot. And I did my internship that summer.
That's a great, great story. And did you ever imagine then, Jeff, that all those years later, that you would be sitting in the CEO chair?
No, it was never really my aspiration. I came up on the account side, and I loved the interaction with clients. I loved the being the conduit between the creative process and the businesses that we worked with. I felt that was my calling. And so I was, you know, I was an account guy for a long time, and then ended up where I am.
Fantastic. Great story. So, Tom, there's a bias that we have. And Chicago is hardly a small city, but there's a bias around, you know, well, the big shops are all in New York, and there's some a few here, and there's a couple good shops in Minneapolis, a couple good shops in San Francisco, Dallas, a few other places. But I think there's some great, great shops that come out of the Midwest. And again, Chicago, hardly a small city. So it's a question really for both of you, but Tom, let's start with you. What is it about the Midwest? I think there's a certain gravitas that comes out of that part of the country. If you're in Illinois, if you're in Michigan, if you're in Wisconsin, Indiana, Ohio, Kansas, talk about that Midwest breeding. You're a Chicago guy through and through. I think that it is one of the great, great fountains of great creativity and business savvy in this country. Probably doesn't get the credit and recognition it deserves.
Yeah, well said, Matt. I think, I mean, I felt it my whole career. You know, I mean, I felt like being in Chicago, that we were the hardworking sort of earnest, you know, approach to creative. I mean, I started out at FCB working on packaged goods, and learned sort of the trade, you know, in that Chicago school that was the Leo Burnett and the DDB and the FCB school. I think there's a, I mean, there's a great, you know, the writer Jonathan Franzen, the novelist, he has a really great take on, you know, what it is about being Midwestern. He was born in Chicago, raised in St. Louis, you know, and he talks about sort of this holding on to your youth longer than maybe they do on the coast. And that there's this sort of vulnerability that comes out of it, a self-awareness and a willingness to sort of express yourself in a way that maybe some of the harder-edged East Coast and maybe, you know, West Coast, I hate the stereotype, but that's, you're kind of setting that up, have. And I do believe that there is a sense of that, you know. I think there's a reason why, like, when you think about, like, comedy and Second City and the school of, you know, what Del Close started, and even comedians like Bob Newhart, you know, I just listened to a podcast of his because he just passed, and Marc Maron was playing his podcast with him. Very much that school of being sort of, you know, tell the truth, be honest, be somewhat self-effacing, and sort of treat it in a way where, you know, it's not about you, it's about who your audience is. And I think that's the schooling that we get in Chicago, especially in advertising. And I know that to be something that at some point I went from sort of wanting to disavow a little bit to embrace. You know, I went to the West Coast to work in the late 90s and realized that clients like Amazon and Taco Bell that I worked on, they were looking for and needed sort of that Midwestern sensibility to reach the broader audiences that they were, you know, trying to develop.
Yeah, really well said. And Jeff, you defied the odds for years running a fantastic business. Maybe defied the odds is not the wrong word, but have really proven, let's turn it the other way, in a positive sense, that you can run a great, great creative shop out of Kansas City.
Yeah, I think Kansas City is an underrated market, or has been for a long time. But I'm gonna quote some research that I did years ago, and it's dated. So if you're fact checking me, it might not be exactly accurate, but it's directionally correct. And that is, you know, Kansas City is the 30th largest market in the United States and ranks about 10th in advertising employment. So per capita, it's really a robust market for talent. I think some of the history, Hallmark Cards is headquartered here just down the street from where we sit right now. You know, back in the 70s, 80s, 90s, that brought a tremendous amount of talent into the city. At one point, it was one of the largest creative employers in the world, with designers and writers and photographers and illustrators and retouchers. And so there became this kind of quiet core of creative class in this market. Also in the early 60s, there were three key agencies that were founded. One was ours in 1964, the exact same year Bob Bernstein started Bernstein Rain, which became a great retail advertising agency, worked with Walmart for many, many years. And then Valentine Radford was started just around the same time, from which VML was eventually born. So you look at it today, you have us, you have VML's essentially their world headquarters sits here. The CEO sits here, John Cook, who's a good friend. And, you know, there's quite a core here. We've always looked up to Chicago as a market. You know, there's, because of a lot of what Tom said, I think there's some certainly similarities in culture and similarities in mindset and that sensibility and practical approach, which made the OKRP Barclay marriage get off to a really good start, because there was a lot of cultural overlap.
Fantastic stuff. Yeah, great, great stuff. And not to mention Arthur Bryant's barbecue. another jewel of an asset. So
walking distance from here, when you're here, I'll take it.
That is a frighteningly close. So Tom, you mentioned FCB and Ogilvy, two great, great shops. And one of the things that I think was a stronger point back then than it is today in the big shops is training, is how they really bring their young people along. I'm going to guess that you had some great, great folks when you were a young buck who really helped you along.
Absolutely. I feel like I was definitely brought. I mean, when you think about when you start, you really don't know what you're doing. Like, let's just be honest. Like, you take that first job, you know, you've got all this sort of ambition, but you really don't understand the business. And I think coming through FCB, and it was a big agency, I think it was 500 people probably at the time. But that I had really great sort of mentors and creative directors who would, you know, have patience. And, you know, I think you go from sort of basically just, I was a copywriter. So, you know, basically start just write, like whatever comes to your head, you just write. And you don't really even have like a sense of like, all right, maybe there's a strategic thing you're trying to reach. And at some point, you understand, you realize what an idea is. You know, it's like math when you finally get it. And it's like, it's been there all along, but you weren't able to conquer it. At some point, you understand what an idea is. And at another point, you sort of understand what an insight is that led to the idea, you know, and that's another sort of a breakthrough. And then you get like, you know, the understanding of the nuance of what a brand's voice is. And it's not just what you say, it's how you say it. And all those things come over time. It's not like, it doesn't happen overnight. And if you're in a place like an FCB, you know, that is willing and patient and has the layers that allow you to sort of grow into, it's great training ground. You know, I spent the first relatively 10 years of my career there. I did have a cup of coffee at Ogilvy. And I remember I had a creative director named Bob Simon. He's the first guy to hire me. And I was in my office, I was probably 6 months in the job, and I was doing what a lot of junior creatives did. I was looking at the awards books, you know, and being like, okay, where can I get the inspiration? I'll never forget. He walked in my office and he said, your idea is not in that book. It's in your head. And I was like, I put the book down. I don't think I ever went back to an awards book, you know, and realized that the answer was somewhere else out there. So it's things like that that you're able to get that you sort of carry with you, you know?
Yeah, those become building blocks that you draw upon the whole career all these years later. I can't tell you how many things come up and in some way, shape, or fashion, the roots of wherever I am today go back to those internships, you know, in Atlanta way back when. So, Jeff, you also spent some time in Atlanta, also spent some time in Austin with GSD&M. One of the guys who I got to meet and spend some time with early in my career in the advertising world, which goes back to the start of Advertising Week now 20 years ago, was Roy Spence. And I really rated Roy really, really highly from every vantage point and admired what they had built down there. Can we talk a little about not just the cup of coffee you had at GSD&M, but also spending some time at another great shop in Atlanta, Fletcher Martin?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think that when I combine the years that I've been at Barclay now, it's almost 30 years, but I was here for 5 before I left and went to GSD&M. And I think the gift of this great balance of having a tremendous amount of longevity and loyalty. I mean, I bleed this place, but I also was able to go and get some perspective at a couple of other shops, which was really, really valuable for where I ended up. And yeah, Roy Spence is, you know, near the top of my list of icons in this business. We called him Reverend Roy when I was there because of how he preached. He could stand up and inspire a client. He could stand up and inspire teams in a group like nobody I've ever seen in this business. And that was really amazing. And then my time in Atlanta was also incredibly valuable. I went there to work with a guy named Andy Fletcher, who actually was here at Barclay as president when I was in my young account years. He went to Atlanta and bought into that agency and brought me over. And, you know, one of the things that I really learned from Andy and from Bill Fromm, who was the founder of Barclay, is they did not worry about hierarchy. They did not worry about what your title was. They did not worry about how old you were, how senior you were. If you were good, they'd give you opportunities. And that's, you know, it was the two of them, when I raised my hand and volunteered to do things, whether it be, you know, participate in a business pitch or whatever, they would throw me in the deep end of the pool. And that just gave me lots of opportunities to accelerate my career. And so I was really grateful to them, not only for that, but the fact that that's something that I really took away and learned as a leader is hierarchy doesn't matter. Age doesn't matter. Best ideas need to win. And that's how we operate.
And let's stay with you for a second, Jeff. So 30 years, give or take, all in that early period, starting with your internship, you then, you know, sort of get some experience working in some other places. Reverend Roy, a great reference, Atlanta, another great chap. But then you come back to Barclay. Talk about the road back to Barclay, where you've now been nonstop, shall we say, for darn near close to 22 years.
Yeah, so I came back in 2000 to actually join another small shop here in Kansas City that was founded by one of my and Tom's partners now, Dan Fromm. So he had started this small shop. I moved back to Kansas City actually to be a partner with him. And then Barclay acquired us in 2003. So I came back to Barclay through that acquisition then. And one of the first things Barclay did was actually send me back to Atlanta, where they had acquired a small firm, small design firm called Fountainhead at the time, became a small office for Barclay. I was running that office. It was only 15 or 20 people, but I loved Atlanta. And it was from there that the then CEO, Brian Brooker, who was also chief creative officer, was really looking for a partner that complemented his strengths in creative. And so he moved me back from Atlanta to Kansas City to become president. And that was in 2005. And so I was partnered with Brian for about 4 or 5 years until he stepped down and then took over the CEO role.
Fantastic stuff. So we'll come back to, of course, Barclay. But Tom, at some point, you make a decision to leave the safety, if you will, of the big shop. You rise up pretty high up. You're an ECD at, by then, the combined draft FCB, Howard Draft and FCB having come together, another great figure, Howard, and then decide to take the leap into the founders pool. And that requires pretty strong constitution, a belief and conviction in yourself, some great partners, which you had and have. But talk about that journey from having risen up to, you know, very high in the creative ranks, and then leaving to become a founder.
Yes, thanks, Matt. If I look back at it now, it was sort of just totally blind ambition. You know, it was like there was no other choice, I think, for me at that point. I had gotten exactly to you said, like, I was about the work. I was always somebody who really, I think, felt like if I could just focus on the work and do the best work I can, everything else will come. And over the course of my career, that did sort of happen. You know, I went from being a copywriter to a creative director to a group creative director. And as you do that, you know, you do get further and further away from the work. And I was at a point where I was the ECD of North America, so multiple offices, and you just didn't I just never felt really close to the work like I needed to be, and like I had really started my career being about. Not that I needed to do it, but I just needed to be closer to it. And I had felt like I had sort of learned everything I was going to learn, maybe from somebody else. That's a little bit of hubris, but I was like, I didn't really want to work for anybody anymore. And I felt like there was a better answer out there, that the large agency model had sort of lost its way. I had long believed in sort of putting the agent in advertising agency, which meant you didn't necessarily have to have everybody inside. That's part of the Second City, association. Bring in outside talents to work more in a Hollywood sort of a model, not like the studios, the old school studios that some of these larger agencies had become. And so, totally blind ambition. I mean, I was 50 years old. And so, a lot of guys are probably like trying to wrap things up or whatever. And I was like, no, we're going to go start something. I was able to reconnect with my partner, Matt Reinhardt, on the creative front, who he and I go back almost at this point, we go back over 30 years. And I had done my best work with Matt. And then Nick Paul, who I had the opportunity to work with at FCB on new business, and I knew him to just be this really, great sort of relationship building hunter, glass chewer type that we needed. And I said, hey guys, what do you think? We didn't have a client, which there's the blind ambition factor. We had some support from our friends at IPG. Philippe Krakowski was a great supporter. And Howard Draft, you bring up. Howard was part of our original board. Still have a good relationship with Howard. And we just were off and running. And the three of us were sitting around in an office that was about 10 by 10, looking at each other, waiting for the phone to ring, type of thing, And about a week into it, we got a call from Pizza Hut, and which was an ex-client of ours from our Yum days. And we were off and running and never looked back. But I can look at it now and think that was crazy. At the time, there was no other option. It was like, no, we're doing this. And luckily, I had a wife who went along with it,
Absolutely. And right from the beginning, humor was a big part of what you guys built yourselves around. Talk about that decision. You've referenced Second City a few times. We had a wonderful evening that we did at my old beloved Friars Club with your agency a few years ago, a night of improv where you pulled together some folks from the agency and some star talent. And we had a wonderful evening with your shop. But talk about the evolution of the agency alongside comedy and humor.
I think I always felt like humor and music, but humor and music were the best shorthand approaches when it comes to advertising and be able to connect with an audience. That you could do a hook, you could hook them fast, you could get them to like you. If you get them to laugh, man, then they're friends forever. And I'm can still believe in humor. I think it's evolved quite a bit. Like it has, humor probably is the most, changes the most of any genre over time. I mean, you look back at stuff that we thought was funny 30 years ago and it's not funny anymore. So you have to continue to sort of evolve and go with the times with humor. But I think that understanding how to tell a story, there's that whole thing about when comedians do the, did you ever notice, And then they go and they say something, and then you laugh. And you laugh because it's true, because that's an insight, And it's really a truth being told for the first time that you're connecting with. The basis of humor and advertising, I believe, is built on that. Presenting something to people that's a truth that they never really thought of the way, until you bring it to life. And then that's the ultimate connection. And I also think music, and I think music and comedy sort of can go together very well. I think those two sort of secret weapons, when it comes to advertising, and especially I think today in a world of 15 seconds, and you got to do it even quicker, shorter, We keep trying to find new ways of being able to reach through humor and music.
I couldn't agree more, and I think those are the great common denominators that really bind us all, no matter what language you speak, no matter what part of the world you're in. I agree with you. So, Jeff, way back when in Atlanta, when you were working there, Fletcher Martin was sort of considered early to the game in technology, and what technology meant back then, very different than what it would mean a few years later. Talk about how you've been able to balance doing great work at Barclay during your tenure as CEO, and also embrace and figure out how to make sense of all the evolutions in technology, but always staying true to the work and to great creative ideas.
Yeah, I did learn a lot back in those days in Atlanta. Fletcher Martin was a good, they really were excelled on the media side of the business. And even from my early days at Barclay through that experience at GSD&M and back to Barclay, we've always been creative and media integrated. And I think there's a really important place for that in the world and what we're building. And so to me, I've always thought about this business as there are elements of the business, and you just had a long dialogue about creative philosophy and things like humor and music and how important the core work is and human insights. To me, those are the valuable aspects of our business that if you just strip it down to its core, hasn't really changed in 100 years in terms of what we do for clients. But everything that surrounds it changes constantly. And in terms of media consumption and the tools that we use within the agency to connect with audiences. And so to me, you see these companies over time, these agencies that tend to completely reinvent themselves. What I believe is we have to have this balance of always staying very true to who we are, and I mean we as a company, but also we as an industry at our core, which is connecting with humans on a human level, connecting with them through insightful, great work, while at the same time making sure that we're keeping up with the technological changes that impact them from a media standpoint. Obviously, I hate saying the word data because it's so overused, but it's critically important. But I think many in our industry have gone so far in allowing data to dictate ideas versus using data for better insights that lead to better work. And so to me, the key is to, yes, keep up with technology, make sure that we're keeping up with the right tools, the right inputs, the right data sets, all in service of helping inform great thinking, great ideas, and great work, as opposed to just blindly following it.
Great, great stuff. Great stuff. So let's go back to something that you've both mentioned. Along the journey, you both made a decision to lead, Tom, in your case, found independent shops. And there is a certain way about an independent shop. If I was starting an agency today or wanted to be in the agency business, I would follow the same path that you both did. Build it yourself, have a vision, put a team together that you like, outsource where it makes sense. Talk about that journey of independence and the decision to not forgo your independence. When you merge, you both give up a little something. You gain a lot and you give up a little bit. Talk about the journey and the mindset. One plus one in this case, I think equals three or four. But talk about that journey, riding that independent horse separately and now leading the shop together.
I mean, yeah, I think independence is still super important to us, Matt. As an agency, we call, the handle that we've sort of launched with was this idea of Big Indie, which is to say that, we are obviously much larger together than we were separately. and continue to be with you know new acquisitions as well, but that there's an indie model and that there is an indie spirit. And I think the model is, you know, Jeff convinced me from the first time I met him, because he showed a Venn diagram and he was like, you know, here's the holding company agencies, and here's sort of the more smaller, let's call them boutiques. And in the middle is this area that you know, on a piece of paper, we can own this area in the middle and call it Big Indie. And I think that is the rational positioning for what Big Indie is, but that there's also a emotional, you know, sort of attitude and behavior of carrying yourself as an indie and, you know, having sort of the ability to say, like, you know, we're going to call our own shots and we're going to run with it. We're going to feel and act more like a movie studio that's an indie or a record studio or label that's an indie versus the big guys, you know, and we want to make sure that we continue to manage that. Do we give something up, you know, and a little bit? Yeah, I think that it's not all just about us as it was OKRP, just as it's not all about what the way Jeff was doing at Barclay. There is more give and take, but it's respectful. And it's also with the acknowledgement of there are things that we as OKRP, as indies, really needed to be able to get to that next level. There is capabilities, there were processes, there was much more of an infrastructure, I think, that Barclay had that still allows us to be indie, but does it in a more, call it, adult way, maybe, than we originally were. But we continue to talk about the importance of being indie, and I think we will do that as long as we're together.
Big Indie, I love that. Jeff, your take?
I mean, I don't think Barclay would exist today if we weren't independent, and I'll kind of give you the backstory on that. But I my experience, as we talked about, I started at Barclay Independent Shop, went to Omnicom, owned GSD&M. When I went to Fletcher Martin, it was acquired by MDC at the time, so I went through that whole transaction, and I saw that I was at a very early age, I was able to see the distinction of how leaders behaved and the decision making nimbleness and speed which they could move at an indie shop versus not. And so my transition into the CEO role was tied to a certain business dynamic that we had at the time, which was we had one client that was 51% of our revenue, and there were starting to become signs that that client wasn't going to be a client anymore. And so, you know, needing to survive. And so we get a call, the client goes away, we lose half our business overnight. I'm 6 months into the CEO role. And I am absolutely convinced if we had people on the outside dictating what we did from that moment forward, we would not have survived. We were able to make decisions that were growth-oriented and investment-oriented at a time when the business was, you know, in real jeopardy, that I credit to the fact that we were able to recover as quickly as we did. To be specific, we had the client, we had probably 250 people in the agency as a whole at the time, 125 of whom were full-time on that piece of business. At our lowest point, we cut 40 people. So we made conscious decisions on how much money we needed to make, which wasn't much, but we knew that we could continue investing in the business. We replaced 100% of the revenue in 2 years, and then we're off and running. If we had holding companies mandating a specific margin against whatever our top line was, we would have cut 120 people, and I don't think we would have survived. So just the ability to act in an entrepreneurial way, the ability to make your own decisions, make them quickly, decisively, communicate transparently, I credit to our survival and our success over the past 10 to 15 years.
Great story. And I think you're right. The short-sightedness of big corporations. You know, we sold Advertising Week 2 years ago. And one of the great challenges that we have is being part of a larger ship. And the strategic imperatives are different. The financial pieces are different. The notion of being part of a public company is different. So I hear you loud and clear. talk about that Venn diagram and that middle piece, Tom, that you referred to, that you said, I think this is the territory where we can really own and thrive. And let's break down, and Tom, we'll start with you. You know, what was complementary that brought the two shops together and where you saw the opportunity?
I think the foundational aspect of the fact that we were both Midwestern, you know, I think that we were both agencies that realized that at the end of the day, we answered to consumers and we did work that was sort of unapologetic about that. That was what built the foundation. You know, like, as long as we've got that together, I think we're going to be okay. There are going to be differences. There are going to be differences in how we manage philosophically, culturally. There's going to be some differences. It's just the way it is. But if we're built on sort of that foundation, then we got something. And I think, you know, when we were able to launch, I look at, like, the fact that we launched with this idea of Big Indie, you know, Matt, I don't know if you remember, we did a video that, like, consumers said, we don't give a shit. We asked consumers, like, what they thought about the merge. And it was like, and the whole point was, when we win them over, we'll have been successful. Those types of things, I think, got us off on the right foot and got the organization behind, like, oh yeah, we can stand for this collectively. I think Jeff did a great job in sort of carving out, this is the space, you know, and maybe we can lean a little bit more this way once in a while, depending on who we're competing with. And maybe we can lean a little bit more to the other way once we're competing, but we can go to our clients and we can go to prospects and say, it's a bit of the best of both worlds if we do it the right way and we maintain that independent spirit, but we're able to provide all of the resources and the scale that you're going to get with this larger network without being the network.
Yeah, and keep that nimbleness, which has been such a big part of your success.
Keep the nimbleness. We just launched something this weekend for the Chicago Sky featuring Angel Reese that I was really proud of because it was still in this nimble, you know, we did it in 2 weeks and we did it on a shoestring budget, but it was really beautiful and powerful. And I'm like, that's the stuff that we can never lose. You know, we got to make sure that we're able to continue to turn on a dime no matter how big we are, because the clients expect it and the market demands it. And it's really the only way to compete on that, you know, front level all the time. You got to be there, you know, ready to go.
Well said. Jeff, your take?
Yeah, I'm going to start by saying, you know, we're talking a lot about pro-independence, and that doesn't mean that we're anti-holding company. I think they play an important role in our industry and with certain types of clients. But, there are strengths and weaknesses of the holdcos, and there are strengths and weaknesses of particularly the smaller independent boutiques. And there are very, very few, you can count them probably on one hand, independent agencies that have enough scale to come close to offering what the holding companies offer in terms of technology solutions, depth of talent, you know, office locations, and the sophistication that you need to really compete, particularly in the media space. And that's what we're building. We're building that alternative. So we won't be for everybody. Super large enterprise clients that operate on a global basis probably need a holding company solution. But there's a giant market in the middle of agency of clients that need the media sophistication and the technology sophistication that we can offer and are continuing to improve on through our growth strategy with all the nimbleness and creativity of an independent, and I think importantly, the attention of the senior people in the organization. I think that's one of the big advantages independents have over holding companies today, is holding companies by necessity become so layered that by the time you actually sit as a client in a meeting, you know, you're often pretty far removed from the true decision makers of the organization. Tom, Nick, Dan, and I, we're still in client meetings every week. We're still, to Tom's point earlier on staying close to the work, we are not any step removed from the work that goes out. And so we think that's an advantage and we think it's a real strength. And again, not for everybody, but we think we play in a, what we're building will play a really important role in our industry moving forward.
Fantastic and really well said, both of you. So we're about 6 months in. How's it going? Tom, let's start with you.
I think it's going better than I think we would have probably thought going into it, just because of the size of everything. And I think that why I feel that way is because I think when it comes down to what matters, we're able to focus on that quickly. You know, when it comes to sort of new business pitches that we've had, that we do collectively, you know, and I feel like we do a really good job of sort of playing the ball, which is the work and the work that we have to do on things like that. And I can see that there's like the best, you know, that if you were a client, you are getting sort of the best of two and sometimes more entities sort of coming together, you know, and that I can feel the power of that. I think that there is great, there's a vision for what we want to get to, you know, it kind of gives you a reason to get up in the morning because, you know, you're like, we're going to go climb this mountain. One of the things that I think we felt after 10 years at OKRP was, where are we going from here? You know, or 11 years. It's like, it was great. And Matt, you probably felt the same thing with Advertising Week, but you start to feel like you're running the same lap every year, you know, and it's interesting. You pick up different clients, but you don't really have that like, wow, this is a breakthrough sort of new day. And I think we feel that, you know, we feel like, well, there's a lot of challenges, but aren't they going to be like exciting to sort of take on? The collective positioning of what the agency is going to be, the work that we're going to do. You know, I'm working with a group of about 15 that we're calling the Creative Council that come together, you know, and our job that we've wanted is to articulate and define what we think our school, you know, and you speak to that Midwestern, what is that school of the type of work that we believe we can be known for? And, you know, it's great work. And I really enjoy sort of those type of conversations with the creatives getting to something that's that meaningful. So, you know, there are other things that we still have to work through, like title mapping and, you know, some like, well, their process is different than our process. And, you know, you'll still hear that as you can imagine, there are growing pains that we are working through.
Great. Jeff, your take?
I agree with all that. I think the way I'd summarize it is, if there are any annoyances, which are inevitable when you bring two organizations together, it's the small stuff. Like we had to pick an email platform. So half our people, you know, had to get used to an email platform. And but the big things, the things that matter, I think are going exceptionally well. I think it starts with, you have to be selfless in a merger like this. And I give Tom and Nick a ton of credit. I think Dan and I have approached it similarly, where none of us are holding on to the past. We agreed when we came together that what we're building is net new. And so, while yeah, we got to pick an email platform and we're, you know, merging process, like that, some of that, like ideologically, our rituals, the things our brand stands for, we're really focused on making those net new, powerful, something that everybody feels ownership of. Not, we adopted this from Barclay, we adopted this from OKRP, but right now we are one. There are not two entities, we are one. And what are we doing net new for the future that is not theirs, but ours?
I like that notion of ours. So as we start to wrap, and Jeff, let's stay with you, question for both of you. When you lay awake at night and you're thinking about the future, what is that picture of success for the combined our shop look like?
It's a great question. I've never thought about success ever in terms of number of people or billings or even specific clients. I think that success to me is, you know, I think about it in terms of legacy, like when we ultimately one day step away and let the next generation of leaders that we're developing take over the agency, you know, what have we left them with? And to me, we will be successful if we've left them a dynamic, healthy business, certainly, you know, healthy from a financial standpoint, one that has really amazing clients for whom we're doing absolutely exceptional work. I, you know, when we talk about independence that even, you know, start to match our scale, you know, the one that certainly comes to mind is Wyden. And I think they've set a high bar in terms of what you can achieve as an independent agency in terms of growth and quality of work and maintaining the same quality as you get big. I think that's part of it. I think another big part of what will define our success as the next generation takes over is the diversity of our team, the diversity of our leadership team, and the modern, inclusive and workforce that we will have created and culture. That, to me, will be a big part of determining our success.
Great answer. Tom, your take.
It's hard to top that, Jeff. I would say if we're really going for the high bar, it's like, what is it that ultimately we got together and created that we stood for, you know? And I could sort of use again that term, the school, but what is our brand of advertising that we've created that I think is distinct enough that you'll look back at it in 20 or 30 years and go, oh yeah, there was that Midwestern, you know, sort of school that Barclay OKRP led, you know, and it was defined by a certain type of work that connected with consumers. You know, I was reading in the last couple of weeks, some really famous New York creatives have passed away. One guy was the guy behind all the Alka-Seltzer, you know, try it, you'll like it. And I can't believe I ate the whole thing. And another guy just recently died who did I Love New York. And I was reading just about that era, you know, that 60s and 70s sort of post-Birnbach era of New York and how great that must have been and how defined it was. You know, Minnesota had it back in, you know, in the 80s with Fallon. Like, can we create a sort of school or a type of advertising that really connected while we were together? And to Jeff's point, the people who are part of our organization will felt that. And when they move on in their careers, will say, yeah, and I was there then, you know, when this started and we were doing that type of work. So ultimately, it's got to be the work that's going to be that's going to send that signal.
Two great answers and one great story. And love what you were putting together. I think it gets a real big watch this space as a comer in the future, and wish you every success on your journey together. You had two great businesses that are now a greater business, and couldn't be more happy to have you both on Great Minds, and thanks for spending some time with us here. We really, really enjoyed the conversation.
Thanks, Matt. Thanks for having us. We appreciate it.
All right, boys, every success.
Thanks a lot. Have a great week.